Hello and welcome to the next segment of Buffalo Who Knew, a podcast series which highlights the often underappreciated, sometimes unearthed assets of Buffalo, particularly as it relates to the built and natural environments. And I'm thrilled today to be with my two new guests to this segment, Maya Peck and Gregory Cervetta, who are, in addition to being architecture professors at the University of Buffalo, they also are designers and have an architecture practice. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
And Gregory, you reminded me you are a Buffalo native, so welcome back. And Maya, you are what we would call Buffalo blowing, so welcome.
Thank you.
We're thrilled to have you both here. And let's start a little bit with tell our listeners what's your background. How did you get to Buffalo recently? Because it's semi-recent. So,
well, I think you want me to start? Okay. Start first.
So for me, actually, I was born here. My parents emigrated here from Poland, and I grew up actually on the east side. And before they moved to the suburbs, and my dad worked at actually Ellicott Development, and he worked on as an electrician there on the Guarantee Building and the Ellicott Square Building. So I kind of grew up with architecture, knowing about it, and that's actually kind of what inspired me to be an architect. Seeing.
And for those who aren't from Buffalo, Ellicott Square Building was Daniel Burnham. That's so right. One of the great American architects who has a representation in Buffalo. So what a great place to cut your teeth on architecture.
Yeah.
So great. And Maya, you are from?
New York City, basically. So Greg and I met back in 2017 in New York City. We were both working for architecture firms, and I was working for a landscape architecture and urban design firm at that time. And then we decided to eventually evolve from that and start establish our own practice and in complementary to teaching. So in 2021, we started teaching at University of Buffalo, just like as we were coming kind of out of the pandemic, and then started our firm here with some sort of smaller projects and installations as well.
Great. Well, it's exciting to have you here. And more exciting while we're here specifically is to talk about this new project which you've launched, which is right in the focus of my podcast series. But you have launched what's called the Buffalo Architecture and Alternative Guide. Let's talk about that. What's the derivations of this? Why do we have an alternative guide?
Okay, so basically we have a book right in front of us called Buffalo Architecture, A Guide, that was published in 1981. It was a famous authors involved, but namely Raina Banham did the introduction. And this is kind of like almost like focusing on North Buffalo and the west side and downtown. And quite notably, it had a lot of things that maybe were excluded, notably the east side. And it was kind of a question for us, like, what do we consider today to be architecturally significant? So seeing maybe some of the gaps there in the history, we wanted to expand and kind of basically include more things that were maybe kind of marginalized in the architectural canon.
Okay. And for those, again, not all of our listeners, in fact, a lot of our listeners aren't in the area. So maybe we'll color a little more commentary around that. So, you know, the north and west sides of Buffalo, we would say were probably more prominent economically. The east side had been historically German, Polish, and then became African American. And then currently today, interestingly enough, there's huge Bangladeshi communities there. So it's always been a center of immigrants in Buffalo. So your contention is that there really wasn't enough recognition for some of the sites that were outside of, you know, sort of east of Maine, maybe less recognized. So you decided, let's focus on that. And had there been a focus on that area before from an architecture standpoint?
Well, some of the, there are certainly a notable number of like churches and community centers and things like that, which are kind of mentioned. And of course, like there's, you know, Olmsted's like very famous sort of park system, which is featured. But some of the more sort of modern sort of black architects, for instance, who actually contributed quite significantly to Buffalo's like architectural sort of more contemporary history were not necessarily included. So some of the architects that we feature, for instance, are those of like Robert Trainham Coles, who is Buffalo's first sort of modern architect, as well as Johnny Brent, who worked on the Michigan Street YMCA, who was Buffalo's first Black architect, actually, as well. So he does, they do sort of make mention in the guide, of course, of, you know, the Lafayette Hotel by Louise Bethune, for instance, which does, you know, obviously feature, you know, she was like, you know, Buffalo's first woman architect. So some of the...
She was the country's
first. The country's first, women architect. So extremely prominent figure. So some of these kind of sites are kind of what we tried to do is expand the inventory, essentially, to also even include, for instance, indigenous works as well. And maybe, Greg, you want to add a few?
Sure. I mean, like, kind of like the inspiration when I was a freshman, actually, at UB in the architecture school, my father kind of introduced me to Bob Coles when I was a student, since he worked at had his office at the Ellicott Square building. And my father mentioned I was a student studying architecture. He's like, oh, why don't you bring him in to meet me and give me a tour of the office? So at that time, I was not even aware of his work. And
what year would that have
been?
That
was in 2002. Okay. So quite young. But basically, during that time, I was actually asked him for an internship, but he politely declined. You know, I was just barely doing anything. But he had an exhibition, actually, at the Buffalo History Museum where he had a retrospective of his work. So that kind of did open my eyes to like the depth and breadth and the diversity of the work in Buffalo. And kind of I like to think that this project of ours is a kind of continuation of that exploration.
Got it. So walk us through, how did you embark on this process? Did you have some clarity on what some of the sites were, or was it really all just a learning, you know, experience of fact finding? And then how did you find the research to support these sites?
Well, I think, some of the interest first came, you know, for myself not being as familiar with, you know, Buffalo and its history. And so, we first, like, looked at the guide kind of as, like, a starting point. And then in terms of some of the research, so we did know that there was, like, a certain amount of work that was published on Robert Trainum Coles. Like, he did have, like, this, you know, exhibition, but it hadn't been yet sort of consolidated in a sort of publicly kind of accessible kind of format. And so while we initially did think about perhaps doing like another printed kind of book that would kind of expand on the sort of inventory, we thought that, you know, today, like the day and age of like kind of mobile devices would be a little bit more accessible, and also could be a way to expand a more flexible kind of format where members of the public could kind of curate their own sort of tours and create, you know, their own kind of favorites through which to discover the city and all these different kinds of sites.
In terms of how we ended up finding maybe some of these, we did kind of do on the ground research, going around and talking to people, finding out what are these things that are different buildings which are notable to different people. And so in a sense, like, it wasn't just something that looked architecturally significant, but also historically significant to different communities.
So did you actually meet with those communities and gather information from them and speak with them?
Mostly it was like some archival kind of research and, like Greg was saying, kind of photo sort of documentation. We do know he's also our colleague, for instance, Albert Chow, who is working on the sort of the Coles like house project. So mm-hmm. who's familiar with kind of some of those sort of like archives and kind of resources as well. Some of it, of course, was just like a bit of like going into like, you know, the libraries and like kind of researching and kind of just trying to find, you know, whatever sort of narratives that we could pull through. So.
How long was that process of research and fact building?
The whole process took about like a year. So we, in order to help kind of support this project, we received like some grant money through the Architectural League and New York State Council of the Arts mm-hmm. Sort of grant. So that helped like kind of just support some of the research, and then also helped us in terms of like building the platform and launching it with actually a very important member of our team who unfortunately couldn't be with us today, Leonardo De Bella, who was working on the back end of the user kind of interface and design.
And in the future, we'd love to expand it in terms of keeping including oral histories and actually having communications and interviews with people of the community to kind of focus and try to show and see what's really important to people as well. So it's not something that will be just something that is deemed by architecture professors or or designers, but something that could really be more of a conversation.
Mm.
And so in early December, we hosted at the Kohl's House, which is one of the featured sort of sites within the app, a kind of open sort of public kind of workshop to help like facilitate feedback and get comments kind of about the sort of user experience, and also like, you know, any kind of local people's like kind of memories as well. So,
and this obviously fits directly into the Kohl's House model. And, mm-hmm. and we've done a podcast with Albert on the Kohl's House. But for our listeners, you know, the Kohl's House is a new cultural center in Buffalo, housed in Robert Kohl's modernist house in sort of the Near East Side of Buffalo in the Hamlin Park District. But it's going to be a center, from my understanding, it's going to be a center of design and architecture for minorities and for, you know, maybe less served portions of the population in the architecture world. So this certainly fits within that mission. How many sites are part of your research, would you say?
So currently, for the pilot, we focused it down to 50 different sites.
Mm-hmm.
But we're planning to expand it as the years go on. So in the sense that like we could actually delve and kind of get some research out there, going around taking our own original photographs and documentation, and then mainly focusing on Black architecture and Black architects. And then we hope to expand it in further. And of course, if we had other things and prominent Black landscape architects as well, mm-hmm. Walter Hood's installation in North Campus. And we're trying to like maybe fill in as we keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at Maya, because we're one of the things we wanted to expand was, for instance, with Louise Bethune and you know, and women architects. Most notably, when we walked by Brian, you know, she did what's currently occupying Trattoria Aroma. So in a sense, there's kind of like, I mean, she has how many was it different sites in Buffalo?
I think she was involved in at least like 180 different like projects in Buffalo and like Western New York. Some of them not all built, but or some of them which have, you know, unfortunately been destroyed. Or, you know, taken down.
A lot of her schools, I think.
Yeah.
We had Kelly McAloney on. Mm-hmm. She also, who's the expert on Bethune. And mm-hmm. and unfortunately, I think a lot of Bethune schools were taken down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. So you've got, you know, a focus on Bethune. And I'm interested to know more. So it's landscape architecture as well. It's not just...
And mm-hmm. also art and art installations, public works as well. So in a sense, it's and memorials or different kind of and significant places and parks, things that are kind of where we get the question, what is like significant to different people? And in a sense, like it doesn't necessarily have to be limited to a building.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So for instance, even which I hadn't even known, but there was a place called like Solomon Court, which was this old kind of like sort of art kind of venue that was outside, and that's it's still located on Allen Street. It's now like part of like a Mexican kind of restaurant like courtyard area, but apparently Robert Kohl's, you know, he designed that whole area, for instance. So some of the any kind of the built kind of public spaces or semi-public like spaces that are around
in Denver. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And So when you held this meeting in December at the Kohl's House, were there some interesting learnings from that? Did you get some feedback about sites that you did not know or that are helping you in your research?
There was some suggestions, for instance, even to look at some of the early kind of like East Asian kind of immigrants who were in Buffalo, which I actually hadn't really known much about before. As well as actually just some context, like, so for instance, like some people gave us some suggestions of people to reach out to have also, you know, have an even longer kind of history and like, you know, really like embedded knowledge of the city, as well to further kind of our this endeavor.
Interesting. Where, so the East Asian, was that centered in specific areas of the city?
I'm actually not entirely sure exactly where it was like centered, but but there was a couple of like sort of like smaller kind of pockets, and then even kind of more relationships, like for instance, like the very sort of common areas, for instance, like just like the Asian like kind of food market, which is now kind of developing into this almost like East Asian kind of mall bazaar, like food court, which has like kind of a link through Syracuse and Rochester and all the way, of course, down to New York City. So so there's kind of like these interesting kind of almost like informal kind of communities that are popping up through kind of adaptive kind of reuse of even some of these very like kind of maybe what would seem like kind of very generic kind of architecture or spaces, but are quite, you know, lively in terms of like their cultural and social like potential.
So currently it's a mobile app I saw. So one, it's a self-guided tour, so one can go to the sites of interest. Who is your target audience? Is it a local who you think wants to, you know, will be more prone to expand their aperture and take a wider interest, will this be targeted for outsiders who are coming to Buffalo for a very specific experience?
I would say that first, I would say generally the public, and of course we could say it could be either locals or people who are visiting, but I think I would say for most people, it would be people who live here and maybe don't know a little bit about their history and try to learn more about it. And then those who are passing through who want to learn more, it'd be a easier entry point. So in a sense, like I think it's a little bit of both in that regard.
Yeah. And how will someone who's coming through town learn about the app? How will they know that this exists?
Well, I don't know if we should publicly announce this, but
don't do anything that you shouldn't do. We could have you on again if there's something you want to release later.
But I think
later.
It's, you know, fairly inane act. But so as part of like the sort of guerrilla kind of dissemination kind of method is we made like these kind of sticker QR codes that we pasted kind of on all of the sort of public kind of infrastructure of some, or not if it's a private residence, of course, but if it was like a more public kind of building, on any of the kind of utilities like lampposts and things like that. So partially through some of these kinds of a little bit more subversive methods are ways that we hope to kind of engage people in this other way. In addition, of course, to some of these more formal events as well. And
well, also, I would say social media, online, and obviously formats like this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your coursework, is this something that, you know, we didn't discuss what you're teaching respectively, but is this something that you can tie into this initiative as well?
I think it'd be something that we'd be interested in pursuing, you know, in terms of like linking, maybe like perhaps a finishing a seminar or something like that on... where the students could actually participate in gathering kind of the information and doing research, but we haven't yet launched that idea, I guess, to our department yet. But certainly, it is very much like our own kind of personal research interest and academic endeavor that we hope to pursue.
Yeah, I don't think it's a pipe dream. Definitely something that could happen. Like just getting students interested in their history, in the sense like we're not just learning this in an abstract notion, but then they will be able to help actually write it and document it, and then it actually feels a lot more tangible and involved. So in a sense, like if this was something that, say, a student could write as an entry, and then it could be uploaded, in that sense, they are actually helping document and write our own history here in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. It would be helpful for me to have a little bit deeper understanding of what are the different categories of individuals or sites that you're researching and targeting. Mm-hmm. We've talked about African American, we've talked about East Asian, we've talked about women. Are there other categories as well?
Mm-hmm. So we're also looking at, well, there's not as many examples, but some indigenous architecture. There's in Niagara Falls, the Turtle Building by Dennis Rhodes. Dennis Sun Rhodes, which was actually also this like kind of pretty remarkable example of, you know, that kind of modernist architecture. As well as outsider art, which I don't know if, Greg, maybe you want to
speak to that
one. I'll
talk about that later, but actually we kind of organize all these as different kind of tags and topics and tours on our app. So some of the ones I could read out is like the African-American Heritage Corridor, Black artists, civic architecture and civic landscape, outsider artists, Johnny Brent, John Wilson, and Robert Cole, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. And where do you see this going? I assume you have a finite period with this current grant, and you're a very specific deliverable. But you know, if you could shoot for the stars, where would you take this project?
Well, one thing is that we wanted to do is, because right now it's for this beta version, it was only on the Apple iPhone, so we want to definitely expand that to Android users to make it, you know, even more kind of accessible. So that's like one kind of low-hanging fruit goal. But then in terms of expanding it, I think, yeah, our next kind of endeavor will be, yeah, to look at some of those categories that were suggested and, like, expand, like, you know, even to include, yeah, the inventory of, like, Bethune, Greg.
Well, I was going to say, even just like shooting for the moon, like besides just having a web app, that's also could be something that people use for research, but also like imagine it could be like a platform that could be expansive and maybe inspire other types of people in different cities that also try to take interest as a kind of platform to expand their own kind of understanding of their own history.
Mm-hmm. And what this is making me think of also is that a number of years ago, maybe it was 5 years ago, there had been a show at the Lipsy Architecture Center called Lenses. Was either of you in town during that period? And it's interesting. It was driven by Jesse Fisher and Charles Davis. Jesse had been the head of Preservation Buffalo Niagara, and Charles had been in the architecture program at UB. And Lenses was called Ways of Seeing Buffalo and Its Architecture. And it was based on two historical exhibitions that were curated by Henry Russell Hitchcock. And they had been at the Albright Knox Gallery. It was called the Albright Knox back then. And it was a look at Buffalo architecture from 1816 to 1940. And this was a restaged mounting of the show. And it was to look at the contributions of women and people of color, and they called them sexual minorities in the write-up as well. So presumably that's LGBTQ. And so that was a really groundbreaking show because it actually showed from this lens. So I was wondering if that had come across your radar. It doesn't sound like you had been in Buffalo when that had. In fact, I do know that it was around 2020, I think. So, but anyways, that might be something for you to look at. So, do you see another book, this evolving into a book, maybe, or?
Yeah, I think that would be of interest. Perhaps, like, not necessarily looking at the book as like a finite kind of format, but maybe, you know, as another kind of marker of like once we reach a certain target number of entries of maybe like 100 or something, or 200. And I think in that case, then we would love to have it at, one of the other kind of feature sites that's a bit like kind of larger and a more kind of civic location as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in keeping with the theme of this podcast, in Buffalo, who knew? And we've probably talked about a number of these who knew factoids that very few people know anything about, but I'm wondering if there's something in this project that you want to impart to our listeners that will teach them something unique about this city.
So one of my kind of like favorite buildings, I mean, although I love many of the pieces that Robert Trainor Cole does, but it has a little bit of humor to it, is there's this one building that he designed a dental clinic for. It's on Northland Avenue, kind of at the intersection of Main Street. And I just really thought it was like a very cute detail where he has a sawtooth roof and it's all, you know, painted in this like this pristine kind of white brick. So in that kind of case, I don't know. I feel like he had a sort of cheeky kind of reference to what the building's function is, but also like making it, of course, like spatial as well.
I think for me, that was like quite surprising is just learning about Prophet Isaiah's Second Coming House in Ontario Avenue in Niagara Falls, actually.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Like, fabulous. Let's drill down. Like, people outside the area need to know a little bit about this. Yeah, that is one of the extraordinary sites.
It's such an eclectic, wild building, like with a kaleidoscopic kind of facade, and even having the details on the sidewalk up to them, to the steps leading up to it. And like, it's just such a, like, an artwork unto itself. And just seeing that as like a citizen kind of designer, like someone who doesn't have any formal training to like make this kind of building, that's like a hidden gem that I don't think many people know about.
So I would assume he's an outside artist.
That's right.
And it's from my understanding, it's been restored. It was disassembled.
Mm.
He passed away.
That's right.
It was disassembled, and then it was reassembled, and now it's... Is it a cultural site?
It's going to become one. It's going to become something that's going to be open to the public, and people are able to see the work coming soon,
I believe. Okay. You're reminding me. I think I need to do a podcast just on that. It is truly just an incredible experience. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this is really exciting. Look forward to seeing where you both take this, and certainly look forward to learning more about your design practice. From what I've seen, it looks like incredible work that you do in your design firm as well. But congratulations on embarking on such an exciting and important endeavor.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to Buffalo.
Thank you for inviting.
Yeah, of course. All right.